She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, indeed. And in case you didn't catch that, we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Thank you so much for joining us today. This show is sponsored by the University of Arizona. Thank you for your support and for all you are doing to make a difference for the planet. And I know that the University of Arizona is getting awards too numerous for me to mention, but I try every chance I get. I'm very excited to welcome our guest today. His name is Bruce Wright, and Bruce directs the University of Arizona's Office of University Research Parks. He serves as CEO of the UA Tech Park and the U of A Biopark. He is president of the Campus Research Corporation, which assists the University of Arizona in the development, operation, marketing, and leasing of the Tech Park and Biopark. I rarely give this long an introduction, but it certainly merited it, and I wanted to do it all. He is also the founder and president of the Arizona Center for Innovation. Needless to say, get ready for another exciting, content-rich show. Bruce, welcome so much, and thanks for coming on this very hot summer day here in Tucson, Arizona.
Pleased to be here.
Okay, we have a lot to share, and I am a proud Arizona Wildcat, so you hear that pep in my voice. It comes through at every opportunity. I have one announcement about one of our national sponsors that you hear me speak highly of each week, Ecobella. We are still very much in the summer season and have a few weeks left of vacation time. The beaches are loaded. The mountains are loaded with people. It's outside time. People are hiking and camping and going to the beach. And my caution once again to all of you, please make sure that you protect your skin and your family's skin from the sun when you're spending time outside. Read the ingredients in your products to make sure you're not doing more harm than good because of the harsh hidden chemicals in many of them. You know that I am just absolutely passionate about that. And take all the worry out of purchasing skincare products if you go to a place like Ecobella, which I do. For your family and your friends, I have favorite products. I don't ever have to vet them because you can trust them and you know that none of their products were ever tested on animals, and you don't have to worry about their sourcing because they adhere to fair trade standards. And to me, as Mrs. Green, it's so important to support companies like Ecobella for our own health and the health of the planet. They're doing great stuff, everybody. Okay, so now, literally, not to sound cliche, let's get this show started and let's really talk about, I don't even know where to begin. I do a lot of prep for my shows, and I think the best way to start is in the very beginning. And occasionally I break out in song about let's start at the very beginning. I'll spare everybody that today. But talk about the vision you had with some of your colleagues for the when the tech park started. And when I spoke to you recently, it's over 20 years. And to me, that was like a fast forward because I remember when it started. I've been in Tucson almost 40 years. And when you said, yeah, it's 20 years old, I'm glad I did my homework. So tell me about the vision you had when that started, Bruce.
Well, in part, we were inspired by those who went before us. There are about 175 university research parks here in the United States. And two of the most prominent were the Stanford Research Park, which got started and really led to the development of the Silicon Valley back in the 1950s, and then Research Triangle Park in North Carolina, which really played a role in transforming that economy from a rural, impoverished economy to one of the higher-performing economies in the world. We as a university began to look around and say, did it make sense for us to have a research park? And we concluded that it did. And with the opportunity to acquire a facility and land from IBM back in 1994, we were able to create the park. And it really is envisioned as a place to bring the academic world and the business world together to push new technology out into the marketplace and into the hands of the people of the world.
And that's what you're doing so successfully, and we'll certainly get into some examples of that. And one of the questions I always like to ask is you have this amazing campus. I mean, it's a vast amount. I don't know how many acres it is, but it's like a city within a city. And what about commitment to to sustainability and sustainable practices from the inside out. I think that's really important, and I think it's been one of your core values from the beginning. And I'd love you to elaborate that on a little bit.
Well, first, to put the part in perspective, it's 1,345 acres of land and about 2 million square feet of office and lab space under roof. So it's a very large facility, and it's growing. We committed ourselves to sustainability, both environmentally and economically, from the very beginning. The concept was that the park should be financially self-supporting and not be a drain on the resources of the university. And secondly, that it would embody environmental responsibility. And we were had the good fortune, because when the buildings were built originally by IBM, they invested a lot of money into putting in environmental systems. And so, for instance, it's a zero discharge facility for wastewater. So we reprocess all that wastewater.
That's really huge.
It is. And then we've tried to embrace that concept and drive it through everything that we do, from the design of new facilities to operations, to the opportunity to use the park as a vehicle to tell people about responsible, sustainable development.
Boy, it was an idea whose time came, and boy, did it explode. It's unbelievable. Let's talk about the tech companies that you started trying to recruit, and how do you even begin? And give us a couple of examples of how that happened, because you are now, I think, in the top 10 in the country as far as top tech parks go. So reel it back a little bit and talk about who are you going after and how did that work?
Well, we had the good fortune, even though we acquired the facilities from IBM, they stayed as a tenant, and they are a leading high-tech company in the world. In fact, remarkably, the Tucson location, which is their storage systems division, was one of the largest producers of new patents in the United States in this past year. Nearly 300 new patents came out of the work of the IBMers here in Tucson. So we started with a strong foundation. We then began working with a couple companies that were university-based. One was a company started by a university optical scientist, Nesser Pygambarian, who formed a company called MP Photonics and has been at the park ever since, bringing particularly technology related to the use of high-speed lasers to the marketplace. We then attracted other high-tech companies into the park, and then we started the process of trying to assist in new startup companies using technology licensed out of the university or created here in the community. So today we have 53 companies and organizations there, employed about 7,000 people, and in all stages of development and all committed to moving technology forward and into the world.
Now, was there a refined look in terms of honing in on technology companies? Did you cast a wide net, or were you looking for particular types of companies to begin relationships with and have them come and set up shop, so to speak?
Well, we'll accept any kind of technology-based company, but our focus is twofold. First of all, as an economic developer and one who teaches that class at the university, we focus on regions. And so what makes sense to a region in terms of developing technology sectors? And the basis for doing that is to look at your existing technology base and also the research strengths of the university. So we've tried to align our efforts to those strengths of the community and the university. And that's led us into optics and photonics, or into environmental technology and renewable energy, or into border technology, areas where we have resident expertise.
And I went on the solar bus tour. I mean, I did. It was like I'd been Mrs. Green for 5 years, and I think I just went on it about 7 or 8 months ago. And to see that, it speaks well to me of not just what you're doing, but of the public-private partnerships and how you partner with big players in this community to bring that technology, not just to Tucson, but to the planet.
Well, that also focuses on one of the things we've tried to do, and that was to find a special value that we bring to the technology commercialization process. And we decided that the way we could really do that was become a major testing, evaluation, demonstration center for new technology. And we were able to form a partnership with the local utility, Tucson Electric Power, and to create what we call the Solar Zone at the Tech Park, which now, by the end of the year, will be one of the largest solar test sites in the whole world. And what we're doing there is allowing us to take solar technology and test it as it's integrated into actual use, into the utility system or into the grid, and determine which technologies work best and how can you modify the technology, whether it be through solar cells, solar panels, the trackers, the inverters, the converters, all the things that go into producing solar energy. How do you make that more efficient and more effective?
And in terms of, I know that you are a very you know, big part of the University of Arizona, but there are so many factions. It's such a really, really diverse organization or campus. And I know for one of my heroes is Roger Angel. So how do you partner effectively in this morass of many, many great creative, innovative things going on at the university with someone like a Roger Angel who is really developing cutting-edge technology in solar?
Well, there are two ways we do that. But in the early years of the park, we were not as good at making the connection as we are now. As we've learned how to use the tech park and to link it to the university, we've become much better in connecting pieces of the university to what we do well at the tech park. You know, part of that's just getting to know the departments, the deans, the faculty.
I'm still learning. I'm a student still learning. Yeah, go ahead.
So we reach out to them. We try to be interactive and engaged on main campus, but also we have now faculty coming to us saying, we'd like to bring our technology out the park because you have something to offer us. Roger is a good example of that. He has incredible disruptive technology in solar energy. He needs to be able to demonstrate that technology, and we're trying to provide him a place to do that. But we have many other faculty members and students that are doing the same thing at the tech park.
How do you handle, this was not in the script, but I always love to ask questions that aren't in the script, and I know it won't put you on the spot. How do you handle the area of intellectual property? I know when I went to something that Jim Gentile invited me to out at the Biosphere, they signed protocols that said, we want to share our technology, which makes such great sense, but there is intellectual property. There is bringing these things to market. How did you handle that from the very beginning? It's huge.
Well, for a long time, public research universities didn't handle it very well at all. And
right.
You know, there's been a lot of progress made in how to take technology, protect that intellectual property, take ownership on the part of the university, but also share that ownership with the inventor, the discoverer, the faculty member, or the student. So universities have gotten much better at it. U of A has been late to the game, and now we're going through a major process of reforming that intellectual property protection process under the leadership of President Hart and the new vice president, David Allen. And the real point is to find ways to early on identify technology that has commercial potential, to go through proof of concept and to really decide whether or not it should be moved out into the marketplace, and then find the pathway to either license it to an existing company or license it to a new startup company. But in every case, we're trying to make sure that we adequately protect the investment that was made by the citizens of Arizona in terms of their taxpayers' investment in the university, as well as allow the faculty member or the inventor to participate in the process. Taking technology to marketplace is really hard. It's not a clean, neat process. It takes a lot of effort. You've got to have investment. You've got to develop the product. You've got to protect the intellectual property. So it's a very challenging process. We do it pretty well in the United States, and it's one of the things that's driven our economy for the last 20 or 30 years.
So once you have now gotten to the point where you're refining that process and moving it forward, what kind of role does the private sector play in terms of investment and looking at that? Because a lot of companies have the resources to say they've got their bank of lawyers that make sure it's all going the right way. Knowing that you have your act together, has it helped? Are you able to attract more private investors and private money so that it's more of a public-private partnership?
I think we're getting much better at it, and I think in part, it's the dynamics of what's happening in the United States. You have the federal government with federal funding constraints, and so they're looking more to universities and industry to play a role in this. Industry recognizes that they need to be a player in it if they're going to get new products that they can take to the marketplace. So we're working out those arrangements. We have major companies coming to us and saying, we want to get involved, not when the technology is finally spun out of the university, but we want to get involved at the very beginning of the process. We want to engage in joint research. We want to work with your faculty and students and move the technology through that whole process. So that's something that we're working through in this new effort, which we call Tech Launch Arizona. We also are looking for the private sector to come forward and put pools of investment capital in place that meet certain criteria and that we can tap into to then fund and capitalize these companies as they start up and start to move through the development process. It's a high-risk process, though, and so the better that we get at it, the better that we can select technologies that have good chance for success, invest those into credible companies, the more investment we're going to attract, and the more successful we're going to be not only in getting the product out there, but creating value for the shareholders and jobs for the community.
Let's talk about that. That was my next question. Is there are things in this world of ours that claim to be, or companies or corporations that say they are creating sustainable jobs, sustainable development, you really have? Was that part of the vision? You have people come and they work there and it really creates long-term employment opportunities and good jobs?
Well, I think there are a couple parts of that. I mean, first of all, you got to be producing a real product. And we got into trouble in the late 80s and 90s when there was a lot of speculation around ideas, but it never translated in taking those ideas actually into a real product. I think we've learned from that experience. So we're trying to find companies that really want to move the technology into the marketplace. That's the first thing. Second thing is that we're looking for companies that create sustainable, high-quality jobs. One of the big challenges for us is to be able to capture all the best and brightest that are graduating from the University of Arizona and keep them here in the region. And the only way you do that is have high-quality, high-wage jobs. But another dimension of it is that if you ask the CEOs of technology companies, what's the biggest challenge they face? It's people. And they have to be able to attract and retain high-quality people. And their employees, particularly the younger employees, are very environmentally and economically sensitive. They want sustainable jobs. They want green jobs. They want us to operate in a responsible way. So we have to create environments, and we have to create companies with those values embedded in their core culture. And for instance, we're trying to track a lot of international companies into the park. Those companies only want to go where you're green and you're environmentally sound, because that's what their employees are demanding. It's what their shareholders are demanding. So there's been a big change in that, and it's a really interesting phenomenon right now. Our challenge is to create the kind of workplace that speaks to those kinds of employees and their core values. And sustainability is one of those.
So you're not just trying to recruit great minds from around the country. You're trying to keep our intellectual capital here. We have such great universities and master's programs and doctoral programs and research programs. And I've heard more than one great public speaker at the many events I attend in Tucson say, I just want Tucson to be a place where my kids want to stay and get jobs and not move. And it's very challenging. I was not successful in that. All my children have left, but it's because of the job market.
Well, that's true. And I think we have to create jobs that are going to speak to the graduates, whether they be at the bachelor's, the master's, the PhD level. But I think the other thing that's really important, and this is true across the country, not just in Tucson, a significant number of the jobs in technology-based companies are for positions that don't require an advanced degree. They're the lab techs.
Wow.
They're all the other kinds of folks. We did a study that was funded by the U.S. Department of Commerce. We looked at every biopark in the United States, and we said, what is your employment mix? And we found that 60% of all the people working in those parks were people who had a bachelor's or less degree. And they were doing highly sophisticated work, but they weren't doing the kinds of things that you would see a master's student or a PhD graduate have. So that speaks to the importance of STEM education, of having young people, even if they're not going to go on to get an advanced degree, to have a solid background in science and math and engineering and technology.
So is there a partnership then? I mean, it's like reeling it all back, a partnership with active partnerships with the local school districts, because we in Arizona are notorious and we're also famous. They're two different really nice spins, but for not funding education adequately, I see lots of great kids come out of our schools. Do you work with the schools to lay the groundwork and plant some seeds early on when kids are in sixth grade and fifth grade? And
well, this is a real area of focus for us right now. We have a big initiative around STEM education and workforce development. We are at the Tech Park. We have Vail Academy in high school, which is a public charter high school that's located right in the Tech Park. We're the only park in the country that has a K-12 school. We were one of the first to bring a school into the park. And those students get a unique opportunity to sit side by side with world-class scientists and engineers. We sponsor a robotics club. We're doing a project called the Solar Go-Kart Competition, where we have high school students from all over the region come in and take a go-kart and put solar panels on it, and then they build it and race it and compete against each other. And all that's designed to excite young people about the opportunities for science and mathematics and engineering. We'd like to drive that down into the to the middle school. This last week, we had a group of middle school Girl Scouts come out to learn about the solar zone, and that was really exciting. So that those are the kinds of things that we're trying to do.
And that might be a way for me to get my grandson back, because, you know, this is Mrs. Green's world, and he is such a builder. He's 9 years old, and he's such a builder, and I can see the way his brain works, so he might have to come back now to U of A. I'm putting that call out. My children and grandchildren do listen to the show. You know, when we come back, what I'd like to do is go through a couple of examples of, you know, from lab to market, of companies that you have worked with, because our listening audience is global, it's international, and just give us a couple of concrete examples of things that you've gotten to work with and that you're excited about. We have about 1 minute to break, and I want to just read this again, because I think it's important for our listeners to know the wonderful guests that we have, the importance of what they're doing, their contributions to the community. So if you just joined us, I am having the pleasure of interviewing Bruce Wright, who directs the University of Arizona Office of University Research Parks. He's the CEO of U of A Tech Park and UA Biopark. You know, what I really want to do is take a breath and say, Bruce, here's the question I really want to ask. Do you ever sleep? But we'll just go on from there. He is also, I lost my place in writing. He's the founder and president of the Arizona Center for Innovation, which I'd also like for us to talk about. And as we're getting ready for the break, don't forget to check out MrsGreensWorld.com, where all of these podcasts live. Thank you to the thousands of you that are downloading them. If you want to stay current with where in the world is Mrs. Green, follow me on Facebook and Twitter, and believe me, I make it fun. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back with Bruce Wright from the University of Arizona.
In the mid-Tucson summer, you would expect it to be over 100 degrees. But deep beneath the University of Arizona's compost heap, temperatures can hit 160. Started by the Compost Cats student group, the U of A Compost Project is collecting tons of waste from around campus and keeping it out of landfills. Gathering garbage and converting it into a useful product for the community? Now that's a hot idea indeed. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
It's got advanced technology. It's got major breakthroughs in technology everywhere you look. It's the 2013 Honda Accord. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I want to share with you that after nearly 40 years of heritage, this is the most stunning Accord ever. The highly respected Automotive Magazine raves that the 2013 Honda Accord offers unparalleled talent of goodness. Please visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson to check it out and see for yourself.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. A while back, I lost my job and I couldn't even support my family. A lot of people don't know Goodwill can help you find a job, but that's what they did for me. I've had this job for 7 years and I love going to work. You know how they say Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill needs your donations now more than ever. Please donate today.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And if you have just joined us, trust me when I say we are giving you lots to think about. And if you've been with me since we started, you know that I speak the truth. We have a wonderful guest with us today. His name is Bruce Wright. He is president. He directs the University of Arizona's Office of University Research Parks. He serves as the CEO of U of A Tech Park and U of A Biopark. He is the president of the Campus Research Corporation, which assists the University of Arizona in the development, operation, marketing, and leasing of the Tech Park and the Biopark. And Bruce, I really say those things so that there is the appreciation for the complexity and scope, and also the successful integration of all the things. I mean, you've got a lot of plates that you're spinning in the air. So before we went to break, I think it'd be helpful if you talk to us a little bit about, like, from idea to seed to germination, how does someone get, what's the vetting process for coming to the park, and a couple of examples of how that process works? I think people want to know that.
Well, companies come to the park in a variety of different ways. I mean, we go out and actively recruit companies that we think have a reason to be in Tucson, to be connected to the University of Arizona. We do that nationally, internationally. So that's one way we can. We also help homegrown companies here in Tucson that may need access to the kinds of facilities, infrastructure, technology infrastructure we can provide. But I think probably the most exciting is this notion of taking an idea from the mind of an inventor and moving it all the way to the point where it's a successful company. It's a very long process. We call it the innovation continuum. And it begins with the idea in the head of a student or a faculty member or a community inventor. And they bring it forward. And the question is, does it have a chance to really become a product that can be either the basis for starting a company or invested in a company? So there are a lot of steps in that. The first at the university is to have the faculty member or the student disclose that they have technology that may be relevant. And of course, a lot of faculty members are motivated by the peer quest for information or for knowledge, and they don't always translate that into, geez, this might have commercial value. So we try to interact with faculty. We try to explain to them the opportunities they have for bringing their technology forward. Some of them may want to just hand it off to the university and let them go out and license it because they don't want to leave academia. They want to continue to teach and do their research. Some of them have an interest in taking the technology into the company and being part of the company, but remaining a member in the faculty. And finally, some are willing to leave the university and go with the company. And so it's kind of interesting. We've seen an upsurge in this among younger faculty because I think they all see that they might be the potential Steve Jobs or Bill Gates
They're cheering them on. Just be a solution to the many concerns we have as a planet. Bring it on.
But once you've disclosed that you have this technology and it might have relevance, what we do is take it through a formal step or proof of concept. And what we do is bring area experts in to look at the technology and see if it is really disruptive. Does it bring something new to the technology mix? And then through that proof of concept, we also try to decide, is there a market for it? And once we've decided that, then there's the opportunity to spin it out into a startup company. What we do at the Arizona Center for Innovation is then take that company idea, that founder, and we put a team around it, and we start it through a regular program of business development, putting a business plan together, developing the product, seeking investors, putting a marketing strategy together. And when they graduate from the incubator, from the Arizona Center for Innovation, hopefully they'll have the opportunity to succeed as a company.
The blessing in that and the sustainable concept to me as a businesswoman, I mean, I'm a hardcore businesswoman, is that so frequently the scientist, the mad scientist, the creator, the innovator really should just be doing that. They should be doing research, and to put all these other pieces around them, they don't want to write a business plan. They want to be in the lab experimenting, right, and to have the technologies and the skills to put that all together in an integrated approach. It's like kudos, because a lot of good ideas get lost because the scientist is looking down at what he's doing and not able to bring it to a greater market.
And what we try to do through the Arizona Center for Innovation is help them evaluate what is the right pathway to moving the technology forward. We bring to bear serial entrepreneurs and experienced business people who serve as mentors to that company, have hands-on experience with the founder and the company team. We put them through focus workshops. We really try to help them move forward and bring to bear all the decision-making capability we can. What kind of a company do they form? You know, how do they take the product to the marketplace? To give them the expertise they need to make those decisions, to decide what to do.
You know, one of the things that's hard for me personally and professionally is when I am asked questions that people want a black or white answer to. They want me to say, what does Mrs. Green think? And the disconnect or the challenge for me, and there is a question here, just stay with me, is that the more deeply I dig, sometimes there isn't a really great silver bullet. And one of my favorite guests is Paul Bonavia. And we talk very openly about, I want my air conditioning to go on. It's hot here. And I do not want to sit in front of a fan with my house being 98 degrees. I do care about the environment. All of my technology, all of my electricity does not come from the solar. So in what you're doing, is part of that being able to find companies that make getting the things that the consumer demands done in a more sustainable way? And I can give you a great example that is a global application. I want copper in my refrigerator and in my car, and I do care about the way it is extracted. Do you focus on those areas of more sustainable technologies for meeting the demand in a more, I would call it, sustainable and in sometimes ethical way?
Well, we do. And that's a big focus of our testing, evaluation, and demonstration function at the tech park. You can bring technology forward, but until you test it in application and really understand the consequences of deploying that technology and how it relates to the environment, that you don't know the answers to those questions. So what we're trying to do is create the protocols, the methodology, the objective assessment of technology and its application. And that's what our testing, evaluation, demonstration effort is all about. You know, copper is a good example of that. I mean, it's a ubiquitous product in everything high tech, cars, computers, airplanes,
everything.
Phones, everything.
So cell phone.
Exactly.
I mean, it's in everything that makes my world work.
And, you know, it only happens in certain concentrations high enough to be economically feasible to extract. So given that fact, are there things that we can do to make sure that we extract copper in the most efficient, environmentally responsible way? And we're working with the College of Engineering and the Department of Mines and Mining Engineering and others and the copper industry and others to say, let's evaluate new technologies. Can we extract, for instance, low-grade ore from ore bases and make sure that we have the most efficient extraction process possible? How do we deal with the management of water? How do we deal with the mine tailings? And can we reforest them or revegetate them in a way that's environmentally responsible? How can we minimize the physical impact of the mine operations on the land itself? So there are all those kinds of issues. And of course, Arizona has been a center of copper mining for over 100 years. So it's not, I suppose, a surprise that this is an area that we're working on. And so that's one example. The same thing with solar energy. I mean, for instance, there are a lot of people who have had concern about these large solar farms, about whether or not they create a heat island effect because you're putting all this glass and metal across the land and sun shining down on it. What happens? Well, we've been through the University of Arizona, the Department of Physics, and through the College of Science, they've been doing analysis to determine whether or not there is a heat island effect with solar farms. They're preliminarily beginning to find actually just as the opposite case. It probably reflects the sun energy off the land and makes for a cooler environment. That seems counterintuitive to people, but those are the kinds of questions that we're trying to help assess, evaluate, and answer through the testing and evaluation regimes at the park.
And give really research-based answers,
because right.
You're coming up, you're not just saying, oh, no, that doesn't happen. You're giving people the information they need to really think about it and come up with the answers.
You know, but there are other positive ways that this technology goes forward. We have a company that we've been working with for almost 9 years called Metapax, founded by a non-university inventor, Mark Bannister. He came up with a way of using polymers, optical activated polymers, to create a medical drug infusion device that could revolutionize the world because it's very cheap. And so if you have diabetes and you have to regularly take insulin,
right,
this has the ability to provide that to you in a steady, monitored way at a fraction of the cost of what it costs now. There are two applications that are really huge. One is that we could get those devices to the third world, where it's almost prohibitive for people to get drug infusion using these very expensive devices that are in the market. The other is in hospitals, where you could administer drugs in a way that's more controlled without the opportunity for failure or mistake by a nurse or a technician or so on. So those are examples of the kinds of things that we're doing through this commercialization process that have direct positive impact. And that particular device could have a huge impact on medical cost care and the whole issue and controversy around that. So those are the kinds of things that we get really excited about. Those are the kinds of companies we're trying to draw into the park.
That we should all get really excited about. And even in terms of, I think about the end result, because I think about it a lot, is it would also minimize waste. I mean, there's a lot of pieces of this with medical waste where we're just growing and the population is putting more demands on that whole, where do we store it? How do we get rid of it? What about, where is that though? This particular example, like it's 9 years, where is it in terms of coming to market and creating that amazing change that you are excited about? Now I'm excited about.
So it's at a very critical stage in its life. And it's that company is struggling right now because there used to be what was, or there still is, what they call the valley of death, which is that once you get an idea and you've gone through proof of concept and you protect the intellectual property, where do you find the investment capital to start the company up? And that's always been hard to do. But the second valley of death is after the company has been putting the product through the product development process, where is the investment that finally takes that product to the marketplace?
And like the tipping point.
Exactly. And so here you have a company that has a proven product, it has a market for it, but it's struggling to find the investment capital it needs to now take that product and put it into a manufactured product and distribute it out into the world. So that's another element of this whole, what we call the commercialization ecosystem or the innovation ecosystem that needs to be solved. Where do we come up with investors who will take that next step and drive the product into the marketplace?
And the money is out there. I mean, one of the things that I noticed, my brother sends me updates and he's in another business totally, but he sends me updates about, for the first time in our history, there is actually an advantage in investing your money in stocks and companies that are committed to sustainability. For the first time last quarter, there was a growth in that. I'm like, yes, let's wonder where your money is, because it's that connection between me using copper and how do people invest their money. And you don't want to really be buying something for slave labor in a third world country, but a lot of times you just give it away and there isn't that connection. How do you help this man with the getting out of the valley of death? I've never heard that expression, but it's one that I will remember, so that it doesn't die, literally.
Well, I think part of what we have to do, and is it's more than us just being a landlord to the companies. We have to understand the companies. We provide management assistance, but we're also trying to provide connectivity to groups that can help them, to investors, to other companies that might come in and joint venture with them in the development of the product and taking it forward. I mean, those are the kinds of things that we're trying to do. And as we ramp up this new Tech Launch Arizona process at the university, and you talked about it earlier, is to make meaningful strategic connections to companies, particularly larger corporate companies that can come in and work in partnership with us to do that.
And I know a lot of things go through my head, but one of the things that I'm excited about is we have to really improve the quality of education and our reputation. It really burns. It just bothers me when I hear the remarks when I travel nationally, because there are so many things right about education at the U of A and at ASU. I mean, there are really great, innovative, cutting-edge things going on. So I like to really focus on that. And I'm going to be in touch with you by email saying, how's that guy's company doing? Because the ripple effect for that is really tying it all into sustainability for all of us. I mean, that's an exciting one. Do you have another example of a company? I don't want to talk about the valley of death anymore. But do you have one that you said, okay, it went, or it's going, or we're coming into the next phase?
Let me talk about a little different part of this, is that we're working with a company called DRS Technologies, which is a large international systems integrator. They primarily in the defense and border security area. And they're responding to a federal proposal to create a series of integrated fixed towers along the U.S.-Mexico border to try to intercept illegal activity. It's a big-time effort on the part of the Department of Homeland Security, and it goes to the heart of this whole debate we're having about border security and immigration. What they've done is come to us and asked us to help them ramp up a testing and evaluation capability so that they can take their system, which they're now in a competition with five other companies in a federal proposal, and demonstrate that technology and show how it works. And so the park's been very involved with helping them to put together a command center. They have put a tower that they're now hanging radars and detectors and sensors and all those things on. We arrange for them the test sites south and southeast of town on state land, and they are now demonstrating this technology to Customs and Border Patrol and the Department of Homeland Security. If they are successful, and they're in a competition with five other companies, but if they're successful, they'll then put their operation here in Tucson. That's going to grow jobs. It's going to create employment opportunities for university graduates. It's a joint venture or joint partnership with our Borders Technology Center of Excellence at the University of Arizona. But it also is going to speak to the issue of how do we manage borders for secure purposes, but also allow free trade to move back and forth, which is in the interest of all of us. So it has a lot of dimensions and impacts to it, and we're right at the heart of trying to assist them in that process.
It's so massive to me. I mean, it's like I want to press pause here to try and absorb that. Being a non-scientist, I mean, the technology of that, I don't even have any idea what that looks like. And is that more of the part, is that the border tech program that we, you know, yes, that we were going to cover? Because that's unbelievable, the Technology Evaluation Center. You know, when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about Bruce Wright and what you saw when you started, and what things, some curveballs possibly, some things that came that you didn't expect, where it's grown in an unbelievable way, and also the international partnerships and how the United States stands up in terms of innovative technology that it really is a benefit for all the planet. Because I think that sometimes we read about countries that are so far ahead. Why don't we have solar on every house in the Southwest? You know, those kind of things that will help us all. So everybody, you're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. We have to take another quick break. With me today in studio is Bruce Wright. Bruce directs the University of Arizona Office of Research Parks. He serves as the CEO of UA Tech Park and UA Biopark. He is the president of Campus Research Corporation, which assists the university, which we're certainly hearing about, in the development, operation, marketing, and leasing of the Tech Park and Biopark. And for all my listeners, you can find out about upcoming guests, about things that are breaking news in the area of sustainability, which to me is every area, by being connected at MrsGreensWorld.com. All podcasts of my radio shows live there. We've been getting a lot of wonderful interaction from all of you, and I want to thank you for that. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Castle Rock Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Hi, I'm Abbott Taylor. With over 35 years creating jewelry in Tucson, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Please come in and see some of the thousands of designs we have created, or come in and have us design something original just for you. Whether you're looking for a simple and stylish graduation gift, your engagement ring, or a breathtaking jewelry piece to celebrate an important birthday or anniversary, you can't beat our competitive diamond pricing. With 100% trade-up guaranteed, set in an Abbott Taylor jewelry design, always using earth-friendly recycled gold. Abbott Taylor Jewelers, exquisite jewelry designs and exceptional diamond deals created right here in Tucson for over 35 years. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. The 2013 VW Jetta TDI is the sedan people love to love. It comes with a zippy turbocharged diesel engine that's 90% cleaner burning than previous diesel engines, and it goes farther on a tank of gas than a Toyota Prius. Chapman Volkswagen has a great selection of Jetta TDIs, so choose yours today at ChapmanTucson.com or in person at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson.
Do you dare to share? In 2009, the University of Arizona started its car sharing program.
Today, students, faculty, and staff have access to a shared fleet of cars that includes 7 hybrids and even the zero-emissions Nissan Leaf. Not only does car sharing give the campus community wheels, but it takes all those extra cars off the road, too. Now that greens things up, doesn't it? The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Habitat for Humanity's Habit Store is changing the world. By selling new and used building and home improvement materials to the public, the Habit Store is diverting more than 250 tons from the landfill each year. To donate, call 520-889-7200. Stop by and shop today. The Habit Store is located at 935 West Grant Road. Proceeds from all the sales go to Habitat for Humanity Tucson. For more information, go to habitattucson.org or call 520-889-7200.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And I dare say that after listening to this show, you'll want to download the podcast because you'll have a lot to think about in so many areas of innovation and change and new technology and biotechnology. I am not going to read the entire intro about Bruce Wright. Let's just say he's doing a lot. He's the director of, he directs the University of Arizona's Office of University Research Parks. And when you're listening to the podcast of the show, you can hear all the other great things he's doing. Bruce, thank you so much for being here. When we last spoke a couple of minutes ago, we were talking about the international connections and the international partnerships. We are partners with Mexico. How are you working with them and then with the greater global community to advance the greater good for everybody, which is to me what your whole thing has been about?
Well, I think as we know, and I'm sure your listeners know, is that technology doesn't respect national boundaries.
It doesn't even recognize it, right?
It moves all over the place. And we have scientists and engineers and people engaged with each other all over the world. The University of Arizona is a perfect example of that. I mean, every summer when our faculty go off to pursue their research interests, they're doing it in all corners of the world with partners around the world. So the other thing is that we live in a global economy. You know, what happens in Beijing or in Frankfurt or in Mexico City may be as important to us as what happens next door with a company here in Tucson. So we have to be internationally engaged. The technology companies that we're helping to grow at the tech park ultimately are going to have to enter the international market to be successful. And companies from around the world are certainly going to have to come to the U.S. market if they're going to be successful. So we're trying to help provide those linkages to assist our companies as well as to bring more companies in the Tucson area. One example of that is with Israel. Israel is a world leader in producing new startup companies. They've made a huge investment in creating a system that does that, a couple hundred new startup companies a year. Now, Israel is a country of about 6.5 million people, so those companies are going to have to find a world market, Asia, Europe, and the United States. And traditionally, they come into the United States through the East Coast or the West Coast. But given our technology focus here and the strong presence of a very active Jewish community, Tucson has some very strong ties to Israel. And we think we can start attracting those companies to establish their U.S. base here, do their R&D, their marketing, their distribution here in the Tucson market and at the Tech Park and create additional employment opportunities for us. The other part of that, though, is that they may need to manufacture their product. And it's hard to do that competitively in the United States. So we may be able to link them up to doing high-quality, low-cost manufacturing in Mexico right across the border in Sonora. And that has benefit for both the Sonorans as well as here in Tucson. So we're actively working with 3 parks down in Sonora to build up the relationships and the opportunity to accommodate international companies that want to do that.
So is that, when we spoke a couple of weeks ago, is that one of the pieces that you described as creating a soft landing for companies that want to come in to the United States and you helping to provide the infrastructure to get them started in the myriad of ways that they have to figure out, like you said, production and manpower and, you know, who are we going to be able to employ? How are we going to bring this to market at an affordable cost in a sustainable way?
Yes. And so that's exactly what we're talking about. We've created a program called Global Advantage, which is a soft landing program for international companies. They can come and test whether or not this is the right entry point for them to could come into the U.S. market. We let them come in and work in our offices for 4 to 6 weeks and assess the market and the opportunities. If they decide they want to establish a presence in the United States, we can put them together with the right legal people to decide, should they bring a U.S. subsidiary, do a joint venture, what is the legal arrangement, and then we assist them in bringing their employees in, getting established, very much like we would do with one of our technology startup companies. So it's a competitive advantage that we have to attract these companies here, and hopefully they will come and grow and start employing local residents and creating wealth here in the economy for Tucson.
In terms of the international market and the partners you work with, what role or how significant a role, and there probably isn't just one answer, does government play? I mean, we saw the disruption, which I understand is really, it's just really press disruption of the you put solar in solar installation, because the price of solar has really gone down. So the government's role and the rebates were so critical, and yet the price is probably the same. So there's a very gray area there. In other countries that are coming, is the government a major player, a major partner, or is it really private industry that's driving the changes?
On the whole, I think government in other countries plays a much more proactive role and technology really? Development and advancement. For instance, Canada, which would be a good analog to the United States, 8 or 10 years ago decided to reorganize their investment in their university systems to incentivize technology development in certain industry sectors and then to help those that technology move out into the marketplace. Israel plays a very strong role in incubating and starting up companies. China, of course, is probably the leading example where it's basically totally government managed and controlled. I'm not advocating that we adopt the process.
Right.
I think we're struggling right now in this whole debate in the United States about what is the appropriate role of government and what role does industry play and what role do universities play, and we're sorting that out. And I think in the course of the next decade, we will sort that out and come up with a new paradigm about how we want to promote technology and industrial development and how we're going to compete favorably in the world. So it's a challenging time for us, but that doesn't mean we can walk away from the international marketplace. We've got to be there. We've got to be assisting our companies as they go forward.
And there's certainly a fickleness that I've observed since I've been in this role of Mrs. Green, where if the consumer perceives this to be something they like government involved in, and there have been cases where they want the EPA on their side, and boy, they go after it. And then there are times where they say, get the EPA out of my business. That's just one example where it's like, it's none of their business. I don't want government telling me what to do. I have to ask you this question, and it certainly is not to put you on the spot, but is probably the hottest topic that people talk to me about is fracking. And I'm not going to ask your opinion on it or whatever, but is your center and all of those bright creative minds that you house out there, would that be an area of research that you would look at would some great mind at the U of A say, okay, we need the gas, we want to get off so much coal dependency, is there a way to extract this that, for me, very honestly, is not so invasive to the earth and harmful to the planet?
Probably not, because I don't know that we have the resident intellectual experience and expertise at U of A that's vested in some other universities. But I think our area has been focused more in things like management of water, solar energy, those kinds
right.
of things. That's where
right.
we have made our investment in the sustainable development. The work that Jonathan Overpeck and Diane Liverman are doing at the Institute for Earth, the kinds of expertise we have in chemical engineering or systems engineering or in OPSCI and those kinds of things. That's where we can put our stake into this process of, you know, responsible energy development. And that's really where we're concentrating our
and
efforts.
And knowing what you do best. I mean, that's critical,
right.
to not be so deluded that you're not doing that. And to me, solar is such an answer. I mean, it's when we can get solar on a lot more houses in this United States, which, you know, you look at Germany, I realize it's a little teeny tiny country compared to this vast land, but I think it's really critical. Let's go now to the Bruce Wright question of it started. I mean, it was an incubator. It was an idea. And what have been some of the, let's just talk about the biggest challenges and some of the most rewarding things that you've experienced in your role of leadership and creativity and bringing this to such a current positive reality?
Well, I mean, for me, I'm motivated by a couple things. First of all, I'm a communitarian in the sense that I believe...
I love that, communitarian. I'm going to put it down on Twitter.
That you have to, you know, I'm committed to trying to help my community move forward and to advance and be a great place to live. And so I have a motivation there. I also believe that collaboration and partnerships are really important, and we've got to fuse together the university, the private sector, and government to do this responsibly. So I see the tech park as a real place to bring those three forces together and create an environment that's conducive to that kind of partnership or collaboration. You know, the challenges that we face with developing the tech park and now rolling out a new biopark have really been the traditional ones. First, there was great skepticism at the part of the university.
Right, new idea.
It's a new idea, but also there was fear from the faculty that this was going to be a huge cash drain on the university, that we were going to take lots of money out of the university general fund and put it into building the park out. In fact, just the opposite has been the case. I mean, we've been financially self-supporting through the activities of park. We generate all our new development.
That's huge.
It is huge.
It really is huge. It's like, press pause here, everybody, and hear this. You were a sustainable model from the beginning, and that's great for people to hear.
And that goes back to not only being environmentally sustainable, but economically sustainable. So I think that's been a really important part of what we do. Secondly, we've seen a period in which universities have struggled with this process of technology commercialization. I think, you know, we're sort of, I hope this is not too explicit, but scraping the pimples off our face in adolescence.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
and starting to become a mature adult in this
right.
area of technology commercialization. I think the university's finally found its way, and the tech park is playing a really important part of that because it's at the end of the pipeline of taking the technology actually out in the marketplace. So that whole process, I think, has been a very challenging process. Third is that Arizona was very late to coming to the idea of business incubation. We were one of the last states in the union that didn't have any business incubators. You know, they're ubiquitous. They're everywhere in the United States, publicly funded, privately funded, public-private partnerships. We now have about 40 incubators in Arizona, and they're starting to really produce some results. So we think ours is a very good one, and we've had good success. But and the story to that is that 80% of all new companies, small companies, fail within the first 5 years. Those who go through an incubation program, it's just the opposite. About 85% are successful after 5 years. So we can make these companies successful with a program of business development.
What a great statistic. I mean, that's a great thing for me. When I started my first company, I read all those books about if you're in business after 5 years. And I'm telling you, I was waiting for that to make sure that I was still going to be around after 5 years, but that there were no incubator companies for what I was doing. But that's...
You know, the other challenge I think we've faced here is just community perception. I mean, up until recently, Tucson has not viewed itself as a high-tech company or community. Yet we have this incredible university. We have Fort Huachuca, which is one of the most technologically focused posts in the U.S. Army. We have Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. We're ringed by high technology telescopes. We truly are a technology-based community. And a lot of people don't view ourselves as being internationally connected, even though we have this incredible relationship with Mexico. And I think those perceptions are beginning to evolve, and people are beginning to get confidence that as a community, we can compete in this technology-based and driven economy, and we can play in the international environment. And I think that's been a big step forward for us.
You know, one of the things that I just absolutely blew me away is the response when the College of Science started their series. And everybody just about it would talk about a buzz in Rotary, people, the community really being ready to learn more and to be a part of ongoing education and see what's going on. What would you say for the listeners from not just here, but from around the country? What would be a call to action? Is it educate yourself? Is it learn about what's going on at the tech park? You have about a minute to answer that.
I think quickly we have to excite, engage, promote young people and their interest in science, technology, math, engineering. As I said, it's not just for the student that's going to try to earn a PhD or a master's student. Every student has to come out of that high school experience with an aptitude and understanding that technology is relevant to them, that there are career opportunities for them, and they need to study those kinds of things. We have fallen behind the world in that regard. I think there's a renewed focus on that now. I see some very encouraging signs here in Tucson with some of our educational initiatives. We've got to get young people excited again, very much like what happened after Sputnik and the challenge of space in Russia way back in the 1950s. I mean, we face a similar kind of challenge in my mind.
I think you're totally right. And that's was going to be my last question about when you're around these great minds, do you live in a place of hope, possibility, and change? Because they are in the innovative and creative part of their lives, believing in the change and making a difference.
Absolutely. I don't think technology is the whole answer to our problems, but it is one of the answers. And so I think we have to embrace it and figure out ways to responsibly, sustainably take it forward.
And I have lots of friends that say I have to make peace with technology. So this has been a great interview, and I appreciate it. I mean, technology is key on the go-forward basis. It's like the connector, the big connector. So next week, Diana Liverman from the University of Arizona's Institute of the Environment. She's been on the show before. She will be a great guest, another thought leader at the U of A, making a global difference. Please plan to join us. My call to action for this week: get engaged in making a difference for the planet of ours, because it's the only one we've got, and it's certainly worth preserving. Thank you for being a part of Mrs. Green's World, and make it a great green week.